Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we talk Tommy football and the end of the season. Then we sit down with the football manager, Andy Jakobski, and he gives us some nice insight on the team, and we finish the show talking Tommy hoops.
Hey, everyone, and thanks for joining us on KTBR, Keep the Ball Rolling, the only show where you're going to hear at least one of the hosts go off on a rant about Nate and two season. I'm Noah Brown with Brady Helmeyer and Althea. And Brady, I guess before we get started, you owe me $5.
I do owe you $5.
The bet we had against Bethel, for those of you who are just joining us, it was points allowed by the St. Thomas defense, over under 14. Sadly, Bethel scored 21.
Yep.
St. Thomas 15. Althea's and my prediction for score was actually pretty close. We both predicted 21-14. It was just the wrong teams. We said St. Thomas 21, Bethel 14. However, we still won the bet, so you owe me $5.
I believe that makes me 3-for-3 now.
Yeah, you're 3-0.
I'm on a roll.
On a roll. We're going to need to find some new bets now that football season is over. And we're going to talk about that. As I said, I'm going to go on a rant here. I am upset. I am mad. And I don't know how to deal with it because my anger is directed at two places.
To set the scene here, the Tommies 8-2 missed the playoffs for the first time since 2014.
First time in 5 years.
Yes, first time in 5 years. Noah, take it away.
Okay, so there, like I said, there are two parts to this anger. The first part is at the NCAA. There are, I believe, 8 teams with equivalent or worse records than the Tommies who made it in. There are 2 3-loss teams. 3 losses. Tommies have 2. You do the math there, Brady. I'm no math major, but that 2 is fewer than 3. We have fewer losses than 2 teams, and we didn't make it in.
Correct.
So that's my anger right there. And several of the teams who did make it in, we have played them in recent history and have played and have beat them in the playoffs. Got teams like Barry, like Co. Just last year, we beat them. And they're in and we're not.
Beat them handily.
Exactly. And so we were ranked number 9 going into the final week of the season. And yes, we lost to Bethel. Mm-hmm. But there's no way you can tell me that St. Thomas was not one of the top 32 teams in the country.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the whole point of this. A 32-team tournament, you want to have the 32 best teams in the country playing in this, regardless of what the conference they're in. I don't know if it's ever happened before, having 3 teams from one conference make it into the 32-team field. St. Thomas didn't. If there was ever a year, this is the team that could have been, and they weren't.
Exactly. And Caruso said at the beginning of the season that the MIAC is probably one of the toughest divisions in Division III. And I was inclined to not believe him at first, but I really think the top half of this league is shaping up. You've got teams like St. John's, like us, like Bethel, like Gustavus, Concordia every now and then. But 5 of the 9 teams are usually pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And now, this season in particular, we've got 3 who feasibly could have made the playoffs.
Right.
So, and to say that there are better teams than St. Thomas who deserve a spot, yes. Do I think that St. Thomas could win the national championship this year? Probably not. The way we played against Bethel, the way we played against Gustavus, we would have no shot against a team like Mary Hardin-Baylor or like Mountain Union. But to tell me that we are not better than at least one of the other teams who made it in, I'm sorry, I do not believe that at all. So that's one part of the anger. Yep. One part at the NCAA, we should have made it. 2, I'm angry at the football team. I'm angry at the scheme that we had. Because if you look, since St. John's, they have figured, other defenses have figured us out.
Mm-hmm.
Our offense stagnated. Josh Parks, who still is technically the MIAC leader in rushing yards, did not score for the last 2 weeks of the season. And if you look against Bethel, in the second half, passing game came alive, and we actually moved the ball well. Opposing defenses figured out our offense. We are a run-first, pro-style offense, and for a while that's worked. But now, at the end of the season, it wasn't, and there was no adjustment made whatsoever. And I get it. You want to stay with your identity. You want to stay with what's been working, but it wasn't working at the end of the season. And it's so infuriating because in the last 2 quarters, we saw a St. Thomas offense that was competent, that could move the ball, that threw the ball, and that threw the ball well. Josh Parks was stuffed throughout the rest of the game. So if you had more time, you could figure out how to get him working. But at least we saw a passing game that was efficient. It used the tight ends. It went over the middle. You saw a lot more of the tight end screens that we ran in previous years.
Yep, yep.
The wide receivers were getting more open. They were doing some quicker routes and allowed the wide receivers, who are not usually the biggest or the fastest guys, to get out in open space and make plays. And they did. We were within a touchdown. It was a close game. It was a tight game the entire time. But we didn't make the necessary adjustments over the last few weeks of the season to make a good push. We should have won that game. I still think that St. Thomas is the best team in the MIAC. I do. I think we could have beat St. John's, but we didn't. We almost lost to Gustavus, and we lost to Bethel.
When you look at the stats from the Bethel game, they ran for 49 yards. I mean, that, and they tried 27 attempts for 49 yards. That's not going to cut it. Against a Bethel team that's got a really, really good defense, it just felt like we were too stubborn to change what we were doing, and maybe it was too late in the season to try to change what we were doing and change who we were. And part of that just maybe comes from practice. We're not, you know, this team and this offense doesn't try to throw the ball downfield very often. Since the Joe Reed team 3 years ago, we hardly ever throw the ball downfield. And part of it is because we can't protect the quarterback. Part of it is because when we do protect the quarterback can't always hit the receivers. And so, you know, sometimes they are forced to run the ball. And in a game like this, they just kept doing it, and Parks was going nowhere.
And I'm spoiled. When I started covering Tommy football, we had Alex Fenske at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a massive dude. 6'3", 6'4", 200-some pounds. Just your standard, prototypical, ideal pocket passer. And he was a strong-arm quarterback, could throw the ball downfield. I mean, for goodness sake, he tried out for the NFL.
Right.
He made it to the NFL Regional Combine in Eden Prairie. He was a really, really darn good quarterback.
And to add to that, he sat for 4 years and only played once, his fifth year at St. Thomas.
Exactly. And so St. Thomas has had a history, a tradition of good quarterbacks. And I think Jock Pera and Ronnie Jones continue that tradition. They are good quarterbacks. They just aren't the same style of quarterback that Alex Fenske was. And the way this offense is built, in order to have a successful passing game, you need to have a quarterback like Alex Fenske, a traditional pocket passer, and you need a true number one wide receiver who can get down the field, create open space, open up the run game, make it so teams can't stack the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, when the ball's thrown to him 60 yards down the field, he'll be able to make the play and can burn other defensive backs. Sure, maybe you need two or three wide receivers to fill that role, but at least we had them then. You had mm-hmm. guys like Joe Reed, like Nick Waldvogel. And then on top of that, you still had Josh Parks, you had Tucker Treadle, you had Jordan Roberts in the backfield. So that helps a lot, too.
Right. Yeah. And a couple NFL quality linemen, you know, and I forget his name, but he the left tackle from that year had NFL teams coming to practice to watch him. I mean, that was a team that was so deep at every position and that was so good throughout the entire offense that they could do so much, and this team just didn't have that depth.
Exactly. But this was a good team. I don't want this to be mistaken for me saying that this was a worse team than 2016. I think this could have been as good a team as 2016 was, but it's not the same team and it's not the same offense. And if you look, that's Caruso's offense. He's run it ever since he's gotten here, and it's worked well, but it could have worked better this season if you decided to change it up just a little bit. Toward the end of the season, they were running the shotgun a little more. They were running some of the RPOs and the read options. It was working. Not as well as I think it could have if they had a full season of it, but it was at least giving them some space and opening up some running lanes. I think it could have worked if you just adjust your offense a little bit, not change it, but at least shift it so it emphasizes the strengths of the players you have. We could have had a really good season. We could have run for the playoffs. We should be in the playoffs, as I said, mad at the NCAA, but that's also on St. Thomas for not adjusting and building the strengths of their players.
Yeah, and I was really surprised not to see Ronnie Jones get a single snap in this game. I mean, from the quarterback who literally saved your season, this game doesn't mean anything if Ronnie doesn't come in against Gustavus and have 14 points and lead a comeback in the fourth quarter to keep the season alive for St. Thomas. That guy didn't play a single snap. I was very surprised by that. And not to say that Jock maybe didn't deserve to play, but I just think the fact that when you're down, 7-14 or, when you're down 21-7 in the fourth quarter, just the fact that you put somebody else in sometimes just gives the whole team a little bit more, motivation, or, just gives a little more energy to the team. And I was really surprised not to see him. They did come back, and A couple late touchdowns gave him a chance, but they weren't able to finish it off, having some defensive penalties.
On the flip side of that, though, sometimes putting in another player can just deflate your team and remove all momentum, saying, oh, well, the coaching staff doesn't have confidence in us. They're just trying to throw everything up against the wall and see what works. That can sometimes deflate a team. And I think Ronnie and Jock are both very similar quarterbacks. And on one level, like in the Gustavus game, Jock just was not having a good day. Mm-hmm. And so it made sense. Against Bethel, I don't think that was the case. Particularly toward the end, when they started moving toward a more pass-heavy offense, Jock was throwing the ball and was throwing it well. And so I think the Bethel was more a fault of the scheme than any one player. And so that's why, you know, I disagree. I don't think Ronnie should have seen playing time. Not that he's not a good quarterback, but I think it would have made little to no difference who was under center for the Tommies. It was just Bethel had us figured out, and unless we changed our scheme and adapted and tried something radically different, we weren't going to win that one.
Well, I think Ronnie adds another dimension that Jock Ronnie's a little more athletic. He's a little faster. He's a better runner. And I think that the dimension of him, you know, if he gets some pressure in his face, Ronnie can get out of the pocket and run for 30 yards downfield pretty easily. I mean, he's a very good runner. But we're going to see it next year when he takes over the reins of this offense. I think the offense next year is going to, if Josh Parks will come back, he's got one more year of eligibility. We asked him a couple weeks ago when he was in studio if he was going to play a fifth year, and he was up in the air about it. If he comes back with Ronnie at quarterback, I think this offense can take a big step up next year. Just with Ronnie's mobility and how well he can escape the pocket and get downfield, I think it's really hard to defend a team where all 11 players, a lot of times when you have a pocket passer, you know, you only have 10 guys, and you kind of sometimes, if you hand the ball off, you're losing a player right away. You know, the quarterback's not downfield blocking. When you get the quarterback run involved, that gets all 11 players on the offense against 11 guys on defense. You're not playing 10 on 11. I think that adds a whole other dimension to this offense that we really didn't see this year.
It adds another dimension, but you have to use it. And the step from Alex Fenske to Jock Para could have been that too, where Para is a much quicker, much better runner than Fenske was. Mm-hmm. Not saying Fenske was, but he ran like a 4.97 40 yards. So he was quick for his size, but he was the guy who would stay in the pocket and would prefer to buy time there and not run out. Mm-hmm. Jock was a good runner. And we had that opportunity to kind of shift that offense. But from 2016 to now, there really wasn't much difference. So it doesn't matter if you have Michael Vick as your quarterback for the Tommies next season. If you don't use him correctly, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
And so it comes down to the coaching staff and the scheme. And who knows if they'll decide to use these players to their highest potential or not.
Yeah. Well, nevertheless, the season is over for the Tommy football team. We had Andy Jacobski. Is that how you say it?
Jacobski.
Jacobski. I cannot get his name down. Jacobski. He was in studio.
It's like, are you familiar with an Oski?
Yeah, they yell that out on defense. And you get a pick, you go, Oski!
Yeah, so like on defense, when you force a turnover and you're moving down the field, you yell Oski. That signals to everybody, one of our guys has the ball, we're moving down.
Yep.
So it's Jacobski.
So Andy Jacobski,
there we go,
is in
nice
studio.
Job.
We have a fun conversation and kind of wrap the season. He tells us about all the stuff he does for the team, including his very famous Instagram post. So let's get to that now. We now welcome on University of St. Thomas football manager Andy Jacobski. Andy, thank you for joining us. You're an absolute beast.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, get the title right. It's sports medicine assistant.
Sports medicine
Football
assistant.
Sports medicine assistant. I take pride in that.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Essentially, you're managing them, though, right? Like,
well, you could say, well, so we have managers who set out the equipment and stuff, but, you know, we tape ankles, we save lives with the sports medicine assistants, right? We get everyone ready for practice. We tape them up. We give them water. We make sure everyone's really safe, you know?
So tell the people, give us a little background on you. Who are you? What's your major, and what year are you here?
Okay, so I'm a sophomore. I'm a accounting major. Mm-hmm. And so the reason I got this position is, so last year I was able to play football at the University of St. Thomas. I was very, very grateful for that. But unfortunately, I suffered a career-ending injury. I had tore my labrum and my bicep tendon in my right shoulder. Mm. And after a lot of deliberation and everything with my trainer and coaches, they say, just wasn't safe for me to play anymore, and I wanted to stick around the guys. And I think I thought the guys saw me as kind of the morale guy, the morale booster, to kind of just, you know, always got to just joke around and have a good time and everything. But so I wanted to stay close to the team. I didn't want to film. I didn't want to sit up in a box the whole time and just watch practice. I wanted to be down there with the guys. So I thought, it'd be the perfect thing to do would be a sports medicine assistant. And Jim and I got really tight from doing rehab and after my surgery and everything. So right after I said I wasn't be done playing football, he gave me a hug and said, "You want a position here?" I'm like, "Hell yeah!"
And Jim's the head athletic trainer.
Yep, Jim Rocco, the head athletic trainer. Yep, my boss.
So what are your duties with the team?
So my duties are so during fall camp, we're a big part of the team during fall. We're a big part of the team the whole year, but fall camp, it's really hot out. Yep. So about the first hour, we set up the field, set up tables, and after we're done with that, we put out exercise bikes. And then on top of that, after we're done setting up all the tables, we fill up a bunch of 10-gallon water jugs and six-packs and crates full of water and set them up along the field. Then once when all the water's done, we go back inside and we tape up all the guys' ankles, tape up all the guys' wrists and thumbs and everything. And we leave all the advanced tapings to Jim, mm-hmm. but we all learned how to tape ankles pretty well from Jim and everybody else, and that's basically what we do.
Do you ever get grossed out taping some really some gross feet?
No, honestly, after like your first week of doing it,
yeah,
it's just kind of you don't even think about it.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, it's basically a monotonous process after that. Because after your first week, you kind of figure out how to do it. And it's just like every ankle's the same, basically.
How many lives do you think you've saved? Do you have a rough estimate?
Well, so the lives I've saved is probably about the same amount of ankles I've taped, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean...
So it's a strict one-to-one ratio.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Exactly.
Very cool. Have you watched The Waterboy?
Oh, of course.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Draw some inspiration from them?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. I always throw out some of those Waterboy quotes at the during practice and everything. It was... it's been a really cool experience. I'm glad Jim was able to offer it for me because I've had so much fun with it.
What position did you play last year?
So I played offensive line. I like to joke and tell everyone I played defensive back or wide receiver, but the looks in my frame, I was definitely an offensive lineman, right?
For those of you listening at home, he's a bigger guy. not like rotund, but just like he's built. He's got some mass to him. So
and you played at Matamida, right? Correct, the Zephyrs?
Yep, I played for the Zephyrs under Dave Metzel. I was elected captain my senior year by my peers. Yep. And how we do? Junior year, we were terrible. Our quarterback had more pick sixes than touchdowns.
Mm,
So that's a real good ratio, right? And then senior year, we ended up going 10-0 throughout the regular season in sections, and then we got absolutely demolished by Mankato West in the state quarterfinals.
Okay. That's a big school. That's respectable.
Yeah,
How big is Matamida?
The graduating classes average to be about 275.
Okay, I imagine Mankato West probably doubled that.
Actually, interesting enough, so Matamida is – so we're in 5A.
Okay.
And Matamida is actually the smallest 5A school.
Oh.
We just got moved into 5A, I think, about – 6 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
We were the first team to make the 5A state tournament since we got moved up.
And what position on the offensive line did you play? Center, guard, tackle?
In high school or college?
Both.
Okay, so in high school, I was I was left tackle my junior year.
Okay. So you were the best offensive lineman.
Yeah, exactly, the blind side.
Yep.
And then so my senior year, I was supposed to play tackle,
yep.
and we had this junior playing left tackle. Then after the first 5 days of fall camp, he just goes, you know what, I'm not, I quit. He quit, so they put me back in at left tackle, and obviously you forget all the assignments, right, when you're playing a completely different position. So the first game against St. Thomas Academy, I just basically just went out there, and as my coach said, just go play balls to the wall. And that's he goes, screw the assignments. I'm like, okay, that works.
And you came to St. Thomas then. Did you play center guard at St. Thomas?
I'm a shorter offensive lineman. A 5'10 tackle works out okay for high school,
right.
But, I mean, it's not going to work out well in college. So I got moved to guard.
Okay.
I played both sides. I was able to figure out both sides, but that's what I played, guard. It was a good time.
So going back to that injury, obviously, anytime you get a career-ending injury, that's really hard to deal with. How did you process that? How long did it take you to kind of come to terms with not being able to play?
Well, interestingly enough, after I had my surgery, I'm like, okay, when can I get back and start playing? Right? Because I mean, you're away from the guys, you want to keep playing, but. As the months kept on going, I started doing more rehab. I was telling myself, you know, yeah, you can do this, you can keep playing. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, there's no way I should be doing this. And I was talking with my trainer, and he goes, you know, it's just not safe for you to play anymore. And I told coach that I don't think it's safe for me to play anymore. And he goes, interestingly enough, I had the exact same conversation with Jim about you not being a smart idea to keep playing football. So it took me probably. The first month after surgery was really hard, but I mean, I was all I wanted to do was get back on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then in March, as spring ball started coming closer and closer, and I saw guys started, like, you know, popping pads again, it just kind of made me kind of like just like a little nervous to come back, because I mean, I've always been the type of player who, if I can't do something 100%, I feel like I'm shorting myself and the team as well. And I told Jim, I'm like, I can't do football 100% anymore, because I'm just because I'll be always worried about my shoulder dislocating. During the season, my shoulder dislocated probably 5 times practice, something like that, at the end of the year. So I mean, it was tough to play through. But then I was given the position to be the sports medicine assistant, and then still be the morale booster, and here we are.
And you're not a sports medicine major, so
no, I'm not.
Are you going to help out with other? I mean, I think how it goes is the sports medicine majors, they go with all the teams. You know, they go from football season into basketball season and with the volleyball, and they do all the sports. Are you sticking just with football?
So actually, I was going to have a conversation with Jim about that later on, probably in second semester. I want to work baseball or softball or some kind of type of spring sport.
Yeah.
But football is my main sport. Just, you know, stick around close to the guys. But I told Jim, I mean, I'll be a full-time worker if you need me. So.
Maybe that could blossom into a future career someday. You never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you see yourself working with a professional team or something?
Yeah, exactly. I could take some professional ankles. Who was professional last?
Red Lightning, I think, is the guy from Florida State a couple years ago. Do you remember that guy? In the national championship game, or I don't know if it was a national championship game, but it was the Jameis Winston time at Florida State, and they had this manager who was like the ball boy on the sideline during the games, and he would just full sprint. Mm-hmm. You know, if they had a big play, he would full sprint down the field, and you could see him on TV. Yeah. And then he became a big star, and he mm-hmm. ended up getting a job in the NFL, and I imagine he's still there. Hey, that could be you.
Oh, yeah, Red Lightning. I got the red hair, too.
You got the red hair. You just need some wheels. You got some wheels?
I'm working on it. You're working on it?
Good.
He was offensive line for a reason.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, he tells people he's cornerback.
Yeah, exactly.
Play the role.
So we had Mark Dowdle on about a month or so ago, and he's always loud on the sidelines, very hyped up, energetic, mm-hmm. in a way to put it. And we asked him, you know, is it hard to maintain that energy during some of the games? You know, over the season, we had several blowouts. You know, most recently was against Carleton. It was like, what, 68-0?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Do you have the same issues where – do you find it difficult to keep the hype going, keep your energy up when, you know, it's third quarter, our the fourth and the fifth strings are in, and they're, you know, we're just running the ball doing C-gap power the entire time?
You know, I'll say it changes throughout like, the rest of the season. Like, so I am so, like, the first few games, I mean, like, the first few, like, we played Hamlin second week, and everyone was really amped up about that game because it was a night game, and it was, like, the second game of the year, and we had that two-week bye week, you know, second week. So, I mean, in the beginning of the season, the blowouts are cool. But when you get to, like, week 8, and it starts getting colder out, and you're looking inside, you're like, it looks really warm inside, you know, the energy kind of dies down a little bit, yeah. But you try to fight that as much as possible.
And you guys, last week practicing, and it was sub-20-degree temperatures. It was basically snowing almost every day last week during practice.
Yeah.
You got to pump up the other managers or whatever your title was. Do you got to pump them up?
Yeah, I mean, some people are like, you know, I just don't want to be here. I'm cold or anything. And I'll give them a little, like, you know, a funny movie quote or just like a little funny, like a funny one-liner to prick everybody up because, I mean – If they see the workers, if the players see the workers like down in spirits, I mean the players aren't going to be. That kind of feeds off with the players. So I mean, I feel like there should always be a positive atmosphere around the football team here.
Yeah.
And any sports team.
And you definitely bring that. Talking to some of the players on the team, they all love you. you know, they all love your energy and everything. And every week you do a nice job on Instagram of.
I appreciate that.
A pregame post.
Yeah.
So what? Tell the people about that.
So my buddy's mom, he's my roommate, Benny Becker, his mom takes pictures on the sidelines during the games. And during the first scrimmage of the year, I was driving around this big golf cart full of a bunch of water, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, and I see her with the camera pointing at me, so I kind of give, you know, a little shocker, you know?
Yep.
And she takes a picture of me, and I'm like, that's a great picture. So I post one of them. And then I get a bunch of the guys I see next week saying, he goes, you should keep posting those. So Mrs. Yeah. Becker was able to give me a whole bunch of pictures throughout the, I mean, so I post one a week, but she probably provided me 10 to 15 pictures to choose from a week. Like,
so
she took a lot of pictures.
She was your personal photographer.
That's what people ask me. People ask me, is there like your mom on the sideline just taking the pictures of you or something like that? But I'm like, no, it's just she thinks I'm photogenic. I don't know.
Definitely. I'm looking at this first one here. Your caption is anyone thirsty. the picture you're talking about. You're in a big truck. You got your fingers up and a nice bucket hat on there. And your hashtag sports med season.
Yep.
That's consistent throughout every post. Correct?
Yes, it is. Yep.
So you go with that one, and then you go hashtag saving ankles tape or saving lives taping ankles or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, these are incredible photos. When I've been looking at them, I was going to ask you who was taking your picture, because these are like professional. And so you mentioned.
Yeah, she has this big like those big sideline cameras. She has this big lens and everything. She does a really good job. I really honestly, it's kind of. It helped the transition into being a sports medicine assistant from a football player a lot, because I mean, you're still getting pictures on the sidelines and everything, and you get to see and you get to post them, and your friends are all liking them and stuff like that. It's cool.
Well, for the last few weeks of the season, I would be taking photos on the sidelines for Tommy Media, and I don't know if any of the Keep the Ball Rolling staff here know this, but there are like four or five of the parents, the moms from the football team, would be taking photos for the entire football team.
Yes.
And so, if I'm remembering correctly, they didn't like publish them anywhere. It was just for the players. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So they post those pictures on. So the Fifth Quarter Clubs are like our fundraising foundation. And after every game, the moms all put their pictures together, load up to the computer, and they put it on the Shutterfly account that's associated with it. Hmm. So you can see all the pictures.
Nice. Yeah, they got some really really good equipment, really good pictures too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got some hilarious captions that go with this too. I mean, they relate to the game. So like, I'm looking at this one from Gus Davis week, and it's for what it's worth, fellas. I don't think Will Tune and Fair caught that ball. You're alluding to the fair catch call that was called against Tune, and it was a little dicey.
Yeah, that was very. If I was calling that game, that wouldn't have happened. It's not because I was a St. Thomas fan. That was just a terrible call.
For those of you listening at home who haven't seen this, it was the first play of the Gustavus St. Thomas game 2 weeks ago. The Tommies receive a kickoff, and they run it back to probably the other 45-yard line.
Yeah, Gustavus is 45.
Yeah, they're in really good position, and there's a flag on the play. And the referees rule that Will Tunin, the return man for St. Thomas, had fair caught the ball. So they move it back to the 25 or the 20, wherever it was. Mm-hmm. And then they pause again. And we're sitting there, and everybody's kind of getting anxious on the sidelines. And they come out, and it's like, well, even though he caught the fair ball, he ran with it, so that's a violation. So we're going to move them back to where the foul was at the 9. So that was
Was it the 9? I thought it was farther back than that. I thought it was like the 5, maybe. Something really.
It was within their 10.
It was absurd, yeah.
Stupid deep in their own territory. A 50-plus yard swing. Absolutely ridiculous.
The picture is you handing some water to the officials. It's just hilarious.
Those officials and I, they ref probably three of our games. I don't know if you guys were at the Eau Claire game during the season, but there was a game where one of my buddies, Sam Garrity, kept on getting pulled out of the game because of his knee pads. His knee pads weren't covering his knees, right?
Uh-huh.
And I actually posted a picture about that. But these refs that are in the Gustavus picture are the exact same ones in the Eau Claire picture.
Okay.
So then and I got kind of tight over the season, just talking during timeouts and stuff like that.
And every time you post, you have your purple black clover hat on, which is the company. It says Live Lucky on the side. It's the clover on the front of the hat, and you tag them every week, and that worked out into a sponsorship.
Well, so I think it's the first step into a sponsorship. I mean, they always say, you know, put our hashtag in there, hashtag Live Lucky on the post, and then every single post that I started wearing that hat, hashtag Live Lucky, hashtag Live Lucky, and I always tag them on the clover on top of my hat. And finally, after the season, it took 10 weeks to do it, but once the season ended, they finally posted one of my pictures of me on their Instagram.
I'm looking at it right now. That is awesome. Maybe they'll start paying you.
That's what I'm hoping, you know?
So for next year, we got anything special? Oh, you still have one more post for this year, I guess. Tell us about that.
I got one more for this week, which I'm debating on the caption still, but I got the picture. Mm-hmm. It was during the Bethel game, so it was really cold out. So I was wearing one of these ski masks.
Yeah.
Oh. So it should be interesting. I'm still debating about the caption, but we'll see. I don't know.
How much work do you put into these captions?
So I'm glad you guys asked that because sometimes they just come to me, right?
Yeah.
But then there's weeks where I'm like, what the heck do I post for this camp? like what the heck? Because like then I'll be thinking about it and I'm like, no, that doesn't work. No, that doesn't work. So I mean, it's like a process sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll just be in the gym working out, and then, oh, that's perfect.
It'll just come to you.
Yeah.
And I know the players love it because they all comment on these pictures. Yeah. And they look forward to it. Do you post it like Friday, Thursday, or is it
every Friday? Every Friday at around noon, I post it.
I know they look forward to it because, one, they tell me, and they, two, you can see their comments on here.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Maybe next year we'll have to go with, you have to do some like pregame videos or something, step it up a level.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I should get a professional videographer just pointing at me the whole time. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Get you falling around on the sideline.
Exactly.
Very cool. Well, you were at the game, you've been at all the games this year. The season ends in Bethel at Arden Hills last week. You know, what was your take on that game?
You know, they were a really, really good team, mm-hmm. but I mean they weren't better than us. But they were pumped up. They were pumped up because I mean we both had lost to St. John's. We were both 8-1 going into the game,
yep.
And I mean they were fine. They haven't been they were I think number 25 in the national rankings that week. They were put in the national rankings at 25 that week.
I think the week before, and they moved. Yeah, they moved 2 weeks before.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they moved to 22nd.
Right. Yep.
But they'd only been ranked for 2 weeks nationally.
And they've. I think it was like the first time in like 6 years or something like that they've ever been ranked.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're pumped up. It was essentially a playoff game. It was like a preliminary game.
Yeah. Winner got in. Loser was out.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, I think one of the factors is that. So, were you guys at the game?
Yes.
So. I don't know if you guys realize, but that grass was.
Oh, it was awful. I was walking around on the field before the game started. I was talking to a couple of the moms on the sideline. Mm-hmm. I talked to Caruso for a little bit. That was probably the worst field I have been on since high school.
You see, it looks nice, like the grass is green and everything, but they must have been watering that field, like the sprinkler system must have still been on, because that field was as hard as a block of cement. Like, it was really hard, and like guys couldn't get their traction. So actually at halftime, some guys switched into like basketball shoes and tennis shoes because I mean they had more traction with that than their cleats.
Wow.
Because their cleats were like basically skates.
Yeah. I wasn't at the game, I was listening on the radio, and they kept saying, you know, they're playing on an ice rink today.
Yeah, seriously.
And you know, kicking field goals, punting, the guys were falling. Bethel has the play of the game that really turned it around, yeah. with the block kick for the touchdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, what'd you see on that?
So I mean, I think that punt we do is a brilliant play, mm-hmm. on
the
our
quick
part.
Kick.
Yeah, the quick kick.
But in my opinion,
I think we might have done it one too many times, mm-hmm. with that, because I mean we did it I think twice that game.
Yeah.
I think the third one was too much, and then they were able to, because they probably, I mean, doing it twice, they were able to figure out how to block it and everything. And they had that really good defensive end, Kyle Kilgore, who is an absolute just monster. And he just came down and he timed it up right and he blocked it, and that was kind of the dagger almost.
And yeah. I was kind of surprised by that play too, because usually they save the quick punt for when we're further down the field, usually probably around like the 35 to 40, where, you know, bringing out the punter, you're not going to get as much. But that far, at least in previous situations in a few other games, like the few times that they've actually ran, St. Thomas actually run a punt formation, you have Mark Dowdle come out and actually punt it. I felt like that probably would have been a better spot to actually pull out the punt team.
Yeah, probably, because Mark's been a really good punter this year. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I go out and run on the field, and I'd see him out there with a big bag of footballs, kicking him all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. he got it really, really good from punting. He practiced a lot. He put his heart and soul into not only his defensive position, but punting as well.
And give credit to Jock. He is a really good punter in himself. He's practiced it all year.
Mm-hmm.
You guys run through it every day at practice. I've seen him.
Yeah.
You know, he's practiced it hundreds of times too, but from just that far back with minimal blocking, a tough situation that ended the worst possible.
You know, it's. I'm not going to blame Coach Caruso for that. Cause, I mean, it's a tough call. It's a tough call to make because, I mean, normally that play works perfectly. We protect it fine, and it's they'd be pinned down probably about their 30-yard line because of how hard the grass was and how much the ball would bounce.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just kind of an unfortunate timing, and that's what happened.
Were you surprised? I was surprised, certainly, that Ronnie Jones, the backup quarterback who led the comeback against Gus Davis, mm-hmm. to even make the Bethel game meaningful. I was really surprised that he didn't play in that game. Were you?
I really don't know. Because Ronnie played a really, really good game against Gus Davis. But I feel like they wanted to give Jacques another shot, just because, you know, it's Bethel, it's a possible playoff game, and just kind of see what he's got still. Because I mean, they're both really good quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess they probably picked the they picked this, like, the whole season starter over. I mean, a guy who just came in at the tail end of the game, which is, I mean, which is great for Ronnie, but I mean, Jacques, he's got definitely a little bit more experience, I think.
And throughout the majority of the game, Jacques was actually looking pretty good.
He did.
Against Gustavus, I think he looked a little rattled. And Brady and I have been talking about this throughout the most of the season. Since St. John's, the offense just didn't look quite as well, and Jacques didn't look quite as well. But I think in that Bethel game, he was playing about as well as he has all season. It was just that Bethel had a really good defensive scheme going.
Specifically toward the end of the game, I mean, he really did play well. And he gave the team a chance to come back. A few penalties on our last defensive series, you know, kind of, you know, lost any chance we had to get the ball back.
I've got some issues with the ref job over the past couple of weeks. I think there were some really, really dumb calls.
Yeah. What was there? Wasn't there a hit? I mean, I didn't see the play, but there was a hit to the head that they threw the flag on. And Dave Lee and Eric Nelson on the WCCO broadcast were pretty confused as to why they picked up that flag.
It should have totally been – definitely been an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty and if not, a targeting penalty as well. Because, I mean, Grant Slavic catches the ball like right in the middle of the field, and this guy, you could tell, he lowered his head to it. And it's just like – and my coworker and I were standing there, we're like, that had to have been a penalty.
Yeah,
but then I mean they talked about that for probably a good 5 minutes, didn't they? That penalty.
Yeah,
they talked about it for a real long time.
Yeah, they huddled again. I mean, they threw the flag originally, and I don't know why they didn't stick with their original call.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seemed to me. I mean, again, I haven't seen it, but from what the announcers were saying, it was definitely a shoulder to the head, which is a a targeting penalty. Nevertheless, the season ends, and the Tommies don't get an at-large bid, which. You didn't really expect, I think. I remember hearing my football buddies were saying they had like a 1.7% chance to get in.
Yeah.
For a team that is definitely in the best 32, one of the best 32 teams in the country, it's tough to not make the playoffs in that situation.
Yeah, it definitely is tough. But, I mean, I guess that's just kind of the way the NCAA has it all planned out. I mean, it's always been the top two teams in the conference make it to the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And that second loss just didn't do us any good, unfortunately.
Yeah. Noah, what else you got? I'm out of questions here for Andy.
I think we just have our producer questions. So we've got a tradition here on Keep the Ball Rolling where we have our producer ask a recurring question to each of our guests, and we keep a running tally.
Yeah.
Do you have the video up, Brady?
Let me get it up quick.
Yeah. So, Althea, if you want to take this one away.
Yeah. So, in the 2014 NFC divisional game, Packers versus Cowboys, we like to ask, did Dez catch it?
Are you familiar with this game?
I definitely remember my dad screaming about this.
Okay. Who was your NFL team here while I pull up the video?
My NFL team?
Yeah, who do you root for?
You're
mad at me, that guy. You got to be a Vikings fan.
Yeah, it's a Vikings fan. You know, it's tough, but it works.
Here's the play from the NFC Championship game here. Or,
divisional game.
Divisional game,
excuse me.
Let me see here.
We've had very few.
Oh, yeah, I think he caught that.
Okay. There's only been one person. Matt Mitchell said he did not catch it. Everybody else who we've had
on. Of course Mitchell said that. Mitchell always likes to be different.
But, you know, because we had Coach K, Coach Caruso, Dave Lee, Mark Dowdle, Fritz Waldvogel. Everybody except Matt Mitchell said he caught it.
Yeah, he definitely caught it. What the heck, Mitch?
And that's the thing. Like, they initially ruled it a catch, but upon further review, they overturned it. And that...
No, it was a catch, yeah.
I stick with Coach Caruso's reasoning here, where he...
It's probably right. I'm not going to lie.
The ball... or the ground cannot force a fumble. And in that situation, Dez catches it, gets 1, 2, 3 feet down, lunges, and the ball pops out from the ground. That should have been a catch. They initially ruled it a catch, but then they overturned it, lost the Cowboys their best chances of Super Bowl this side of the 1990s.
And Noah's not salty about it.
I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm a particularly big Tony Romo and Dez Bryant fan, and that play haunts my nightmares to this day.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Tony Romo's turned into quite the commentator.
He guesses
what's going to happen. It's unreal.
Yeah. That's the thing. He doesn't guess. He knows what's going to happen.
Exactly.
He can diagnose the defense faster than the quarterback on the field.
Well, for some reason, they told him to stop doing that. His first year, was it last year?
He was unreal doing it.
He was doing it like, they're going to run to the right.
Yeah.
They ran to the right.
I loved it.
To the left. What did they do? They threw to the left. Well, Andy, thank you for coming on.
For sure.
You're an absolute beast. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That. For sure.
And that was Andy Jacobowski.
Ofsky!
Jacobowski.
Yep. Jacob. Got it now.
Oski, got it?
Got it.
Got it. I'm going to quiz you on it next week.
Jacobowski.
But yeah, first non-athlete. I mean, he was an athlete, but like first person not actively playing or coaching for a team on. It was cool.
Yeah, he's awesome. Andy, he's the guy you see in the hallway, and you just got to have a smile from ear to ear when you see that guy. Andy is awesome. Everybody at this school loves him, and he just a great personality, great guy to have around.
You know, I don't have an Instagram, but after hearing and seeing some of the photos he's posted, I am considering getting one solely to follow him.
Yeah, no, I gotta get his handle is just at Andy Jacobowski. It's JACOBOSKI. If people want to follow him, Andy at Andy Jacobowski, great follow.
Yeah.
I don't understand
how you couldn't pronounce that. It's spelled phonetically. Yeah. Jacob Oski.
But there's like an O, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move on from football a little bit here, and we'll talk Tommy Hoops now as they start their season tomorrow, which is Wednesday. The men's team is heading out to Brooklyn as we speak, I think. They're heading out to play the like Brooklyn Bulldogs, a D3 team out there, to start their season, which for a team here that – a young team that's returning a couple of freshmen from last year that Burt Hedstrom and Ryan Lindberg will likely start. I think they're going to start a freshman point guard in Anders Nelson, a kid from Edina who I watched him play in practice a few days, watched him play in the scrimmage a few weeks ago. This kid is the real deal. He reminds me a lot of Grant Schaefer, a little bit quicker and a better defender than Grant was, but he can take it to the hole just like Grant was able to, and really has just the respect as a freshman. It's surprising to see him so well respected among this team, and you can just see the other players on the team just really respect him, and it feels like he is going to be running the show for a Tommy team that's going to try to shoot a lot of threes. This is a Coach Tower team that is deep, like we've had in the years past, but they're very undersized. I think their biggest guy starting is probably going to be Elijah Hanna, and he's maybe 6'4" on a good day. There's no big guy on this team. There's no Ryan Bull that you can just throw the ball into.
Well, and I think we saw that last year, too, where Ryan Bull was the only big guy.
Yeah,
they had
6'5", 6'6", maybe, and then not a huge guy either.
And so that, on top of a whole bunch of injuries, the men's team got off to a really slow start last season. They finally started picking it up toward the end there. But, yeah, as you were saying, I'm really excited for this men's team. Not only are they a year older, they had a lot of young guys last year. But three-point teams are always fun to watch, and when you're undersized, you kind of have to go from the perimeter. You can't fight your way up into the paint and everything, so yeah, this is going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, and I look at, when I go through the list here, Burt Hedstrom, a guy who played a lot of minutes as a freshman, he's beefed up. He looks very cut watching him play yesterday. He's got some muscle on him now, and he's going to have what looks to be a big season, and I'm really excited to watch this team shoot a lot of threes. I mean, you said it's fun to watch these teams, because the thing about this Tommy team is they're going to be able to compete with everybody and beat almost everybody in the country if they play well. But we're also going to be able, you know, we can lose to almost anybody. You have an off night, you can lose to anybody, basically. So every game is going to be competitive for this team. And they started out this weekend in Brooklyn, a big test for this Tommy team. As they look, they have four games on the regular season here before they head to U.S. Bank on Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving. I think it's the 30th, they had to play River Falls at U.S. Bank in a game that will be preparation for the Final Four for the Division I come April. So that will be very exciting.
Right. And the St. Thomas-River Falls match will be the very first game hosted at U.S. Bank Stadium, first basketball game hosted at U.S. Bank Stadium. That's going to be exciting. I've got a buddy who's down at River Falls. He and I have been good friends for, oh goodness, about 8 years now. And as soon as that was announced, he got really excited. He's not a big basketball guy, but just the atmosphere around it, everybody's been looking forward to this game. And I think both of these teams will be playing really well by that point.
Yeah, and it's going to be like a 6 o'clock tip, I believe, and the Gophers are going to play right after. So two really good basketball games. Tickets are going for like – student tickets, I think, are $15. But for the rest of the stadium, these are going to be $100-plus tickets.
I was looking at ticket prices about a month and a half ago, And some of the cheapest seats I could find were $75.
Okay, way up there.
Yeah.
So they're going to have the court, I think, in the end zone by the big Jumbotron, by mm-hmm. where the doors at US Bank are going to open up. So that's where the court is going to be for this game. I don't think – I'm almost positive they won't have it there for the Final Four. They put it right in the middle of the field and bring all the stands in right. So they could fill that whole thing up to – you know, whatever, 70,000 if they can fit that in there.
Yeah, but what this is going to be, like I said, it's going to be in the end zone. The long side of the court is going to run along the long side of the end zone. Mm-hmm. So the back of the end zone will be one side of the court. They're going to put up, I believe, some bleachers on the other side yep. for a student section.
Yep.
But then they'll have a few sections in the main stands open.
Yeah, so it's going to be an awesome event. Just from a fan perspective and for the Tommy team, who it's hard to shoot threes in a big arena like that. They talk about it in the Final Four when teams get that far, that shooting with that kind of, it's a whole different depth perception. You got, the massive ceiling. So it's kind of a different experience for this Tommy team that likes to shoot threes. That might be something to watch for that game.
And I think, so obviously we're looking forward to that one, but then also this women's team as well. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a little upset that they're not playing at US Bank Stadium because over the past few years, the women have outplayed the men significantly. They have
Absolutely.
Been a powerhouse throughout the past few seasons, and I think they're going to continue to do so. You've got a strong senior core in players like Lucia Renikoff, Kaylee Brazel, Bobby Brendifer, Hannah Spaulding.
Yeah, Hannah Spaulding being the best player in the MIAC last year returns.
Exactly. Spaulding was huge. And 2 years ago, Caitlin Langer was the center.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of questions like, well, who's going to replace Langer? She's this All-American, All-MIAC, probably one of the best players in the country. How do you replace her? Hannah Spaulding, seemingly out of nowhere, comes up and is playing just as well and in some cases even better than Caitlin Langer.
Yeah, she has completely taken the role of Langer last year and ran with it. And this is a really good basketball team. I remember watching them play St. Ben's last year after the men played St. John's, and it wasn't even a ball game. You know, the way they moved the basketball. And this is a Ruth Sin basketball team that is very, very disciplined. They run an offense that is crisp and tight, and they move the ball. They get it inside to Hannah, and when she gets double-teamed, they kick it out for an open three, and they're really, really disciplined, and they play great defense. This team can go really far.
2 years ago, they made it to the Final Four, and I traveled with the team to cover it. Unfortunately, they lost in the semifinal round. But just being with the team for I think it was like 3 or 4 days that we were out there, watching them practice then, and then just a couple days ago, watching a women's practice now, it's the exact same. There's no difference. So this team is always preparing like they're playing in a late-round playoff game. And Ruth Sin is one of my favorite people on the St. Thomas campus. She's just a fantastic person, but she's a fantastic coach and does wonders with her players. It doesn't matter who is on the court at any given time. They're playing their best because they're playing for Ruth Sin, and they're playing their best because of Ruth Sin.
Yeah, and Game and I traveled last year to Waverly, Iowa, where they lost in the Sweet 16. I think it was like East Texas Baptist in some award, some combination there. I don't know if I got the school name
some,
quite right.
Some ordinal direction, Texas, some Baptist, Christian denomination.
So they lost that game, and it was devastation for that team because they had a lot of high hopes. I remember watching the post-game interview, and Spaulding and some of the other girls are crying. And, you know, when you think about some of the big pieces on that team, they're all back. And don't ever underestimate a senior class that had a heartbreaking loss last year. And probably around that was, you know, they probably deserve to go a little farther with how good they were last year. So don't underestimate this team that's got revenge on their mind.
Yeah, any one of these teams in the past 4 or 5 years could have won a national championship, I think. Yeah. And I think they've got the motivation of all of those teams going in this year. And I, as much as I think John Tower and the men's team can do well, I think the women have a higher ceiling. I think they should be some of the favorites, if not the favorite, for the NCAA Division III championship this year.
And if they can make it to that game and win that game, it'll be under a new athletic director. We just hired a new one this week. Is it Phil Esten?
Yep, Dr. Phil Esten. We're going to have him on the show actually next week.
Yep.
We're recording this today, Wednesday, November 14th. We've got an interview with him tomorrow via phone. We'll have that as our main guest for next week. So we won't spoil too much. But yeah, right now he's the deputy athletics director out at Penn State. Was a former Tommy, graduated in 95, played baseball here as backup catcher. They announced his hiring earlier this week. and I went to go cover the press conference. And just talking to him, he seemed really excited to be here. A really pleasant guy to talk to. He was fun to be around. So that'll be a good show. We're looking forward to that one.
Yeah, we'll sit down with him and ask all the tough questions for you guys next week with Phil. Look forward to that.
As tough as keep the ball rolling can get. We're not not very hard-hitting in a lot of respects.
Well, yeah, you know, we just ask the questions that people want to hear.
Exactly, and sometimes it's not. It's light and breezy for most of the time.
Yeah.
And on that note, that's all we've got for you here on Keep the Ball Rolling. For Brady Halbmeyer and Althea Larson, I'm Noah Brown, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixlr.com/KUST-radio.